Welcome, folks, to The Uncommon Good with Bo Bonner and Dr. Bud Maher. Every week, diving deep into the truth of Catholic social teaching and restoring all things in Christ. The Uncommon Good, live from Iowa Catholic Radio's Mercy Live Up Studios.
The Uncommon Good is on the air. I'm Bo Bonner.
Dr. Bud Maher.
We're coming to you live from our various locales spread throughout the nation. Me, Des Moines, Iowa, finally seeming like it's spring. I actually see people wearing shirts that are not parkas. Bud, through the miracle of robotic technology out in Pittsburgh, Bud, have people started to eat French fries outdoors finally in your neck of the woods?
Yeah, you can see French fry eating happening in different outdoor venues.
So, Bud, you know, we're coming to you live through the miracle of Holy Folks donation and technology here, Iowa Catholic Radio's Mercy Live Up Studios. Bud, not only broadcasting to most of Iowa, now 10 stations throughout Oklahoma. We want to thank all the people who made that possible as well. And then if you have, for instance, the Iowa Catholic app or iowacatholic.com, brought to us by Blessman Ministries and the People's Abstract Company, you can be in even far worse places than the places we just mentioned and still listen to this show, Bud.
That's awesome. I've been excited to expand some of our reach. Welcome to our listeners throughout Oklahoma. It's a great blessing to be with you on the radio.
So today, Bud, it's going to be another great blessing because I actually have more people in the studio than you do, so we're going to get to team up on you. We have Iowa Catholic Radio All-Stars. All-Stars is the right word, right? Or do we want to say mega superstars? How many times have they been on the radio, Bud, with us?
This has to be at least three, I think. I feel like the odd man out because you guys have that, you know, like the in-studio energy and electricity.
The charisma, yes.
I'm sorry, I don't know, like I can't see the wistful glances, or that's probably not the right phrase.
No, I'm okay with it. But if you're talking about Mr. Charisma himself, John Wynn is with us, and then Mr., I don't know about, what's the right word for Adam Story, but Mr. Truth itself, right? Like just the truth talker. Adam Story. We're going to get to them when we get back from our first break. But as always, we're underwritten by Cartridge World. Cartridge World, 801 73rd Street in Windsor Heights, Iowa, for those times that you need to print things that are important. For instance, I might need to print for my Oklahoma City Thunder messages that say, like, actually play basketball, for instance.
Well, for me, with something like printing and cartridge needs, I just like to be able to talk to someone who I feel like, you know, they're shooting straight with me. And the folks at Cartridge World are certainly like that. Environmentally friendly printing for business customers, pickup and delivery are available. So a lot of great options over there.
Maybe that's what we should do. We should print on this day, April 25th, 2018, the St. Louis Cardinals were in first place, because I don't see that one holding out.
No, even last night, blowing that game in extra innings. I think we've mentioned him on the program before. We have a mutual friend who his life outside of work is pretty much dedicated to getting Mike Matheny fired. So if you need to send letters to the general manager of the St. Louis Cardinals.
Cartridge World. It's going to help you out. That's a good point. Also, as always, underwritten by Mercy College of Health Sciences, where I do all sorts of things. Actually, we have a lot of representative here. We got two adjuncts, you and John. I teach there, the director of ministry and mission. And it's a pretty cool week, Bud, because we get a class to be graduating. We have our big graduation this Friday. All sorts of exciting stuff. We get to have Bishop Pates. He's going to come up there. We bless the hands of the future healthcare workers. It's a very powerful ceremony. You know, nursing school, allied health, all of these things we have people do are really hard degrees. They really are. They take a lot of work. And so to sort of bless their hands before we send them out, a very powerful thing indeed, and it's wonderful to be a part of it.
Yeah, you know, this is finals week, so a little extra stress, but it is like it's nice to get to this point sort of close to the finish line. I did wake up to a couple frantic emails about the final exam that I'm giving in bioethics, but it will all be sorted out. Great things happening over at Mercy College of Health Sciences.
Did you, like, put them in a dilemma where you're like, I'm about to do this to a patient, am I right or not? And they're like, whoa! They have to freak out whether they're going to save a life or not.
You have to be careful with those frantic emails. Like, one student was texting me, and I think her computer had frozen during the final exam. And, like, even, like, a slight hesitation as the professor just makes them very nervous. So my initial message is we'll make it through this.
Yeah, my favorite still, although I'm not castigating any of your students, but this might have been when you or I were teaching together, but maybe this is just me teaching my own. The best is like halfway through the year, someone had never done anything on an online course, and we're like, what's the problem? And they're like, I don't have a computer. And you're like, what? that's like, you know, computer access is kind of important for an online course. I didn't know what to say. You know, it's one of those moments where you just have to be an adult and not tell people what you're actually thinking inside of your head.
Yeah, I was trying to envision that. Like, I don't know. In my mind, I had this image of like a cardboard box that they had turned into a computer. But
like they were pretending really hard.
I'm not sure what the practical strategy was.
Yeah, so, you know, Mercy College, we have at multiple degrees you can actually get all online if you have computer access. Yep. We really need to stress this point, that our online degrees are great for people who have access not only to computers, bud, but this thing, I don't know if you've heard of it, the World Wide Web. The World Wide Web, rather necessary for online degrees.
That's
However,
right.
There are people marching across the stage this Friday who have literally never stepped foot on campus, did the whole degree online, and you can do that too, mchs.edu. Again, thank you, Mercy College. When we get back here in a few minutes, we're going to talk to our all-stars, Adam and John, and we're going to talk about a wonderful, stirring, happy topic, the long defeat. Stay tuned. But if people want to get in on this one, talking about the long defeat, this comes, of course, from J.R.R. Tolkien. And whenever you bring up Tolkien, whenever you nerd out and talk about Lord of the Rings, that's probably your best chance to get people to chime in. And if people want to do that, they can do that on the text line, on the Zip Whip. 515-223-1150. 515-223-1150. If you have comments, if you think people are wrong, for instance, our guests, not the hosts, the Zip Whip line. 515-223-1150. Bud, do you have any words that you think are going to prompt people to actually text in this time?
We'll do the best that we can. I love receiving texts and hearing back from our listeners. So, please take advantage of the Zip Whip line.
So, inflammatory, consoling, questioning, or just commentary, the Zip Whip line. 515-223-1150. This is the Uncommon Good. We'll be back after these messages.
Hey guys, our next Man Up event is coming up on Tuesday, May 8th at Our Lady's Immaculate Heart in Ankeny. Everything starts at 5:20 with the Rosary. The theme, Don't Stop Believing, Keeping the Faith Through Focused. Our very special guests will include Deacon Tom Bradley, Father John Seda, Father Mark, Addie Magruder, and with a panel of 6 students. Register online at iowacatholicradio.com and be entered into a drawing for 2 pairs of tickets to the Christ Our Life Conference. Call right now, 515-223-1150.
Catholic education provides the best opportunities for academics, sports, the arts, and service. Yet many feel it is financially out of reach. Well, don't let that stop you. Catholic Tuition Organization can help you with tuition so Catholic education can be a reality for your children. Go online to ctoiowa.org and click on tuition assistance. The bottom line, it's for the kids and for their future.
Support for the Uncommon Good is provided by Cartridge World. Cartridge World is an industry leader delivering high-performance printing products that help you save time, money, and print great.
Perfect for businesses, home offices, college students, or busy moms trying to find affordable printing supplies, including ink, toner, paper, or printers. For business customers, pickup and delivery are available. Products are guaranteed or full replacement.
Cartridge World, your low-cost, environmentally friendly printing experts, 801 73rd Street in Windsor Heights, 515-564-7400, and online at cartridgeworld.com.
Since 1924, St. Vincent de Paul has been helping those less fortunate work towards self-sufficiency. Last year, St. Vincent de Paul helped over 20,000 individuals with food, clothing, and shelter, while also offering classes in financial literacy, high school completion, career readiness, and prisoner reentry. SVDPDSM.org, 515-282-8327. Shop, donate, volunteer, serve. This message was brought to you by Homemakers Furniture.
We're back with the Uncommon Good. Bo Bonner and Dr. Bud Maher with you here today with 2 all-stars to the show who have been multiple times. We got here John and Adam, and you guys do so much, I'm going to let you introduce what all you do, because both of your titles have multiple extensions to them. So, John, real quick, what all do you do?
Yeah, so the official title that I hold is the Director of Faith Journey. The office does several things, primarily faith formation with all the Catholic school teachers in our Catholic schools. And then secondarily, I direct the Catechetical Institute. And then the other part of my job is I'm the director of curriculum for the permanent diaconate. And then I help out with the Catholic Culture Lecture Series and then several other things.
Yeah, adjunct at Mercy as well.
Adjunct at Mercy as well, yeah.
Yeah, so that's John Wynn. Adam Story, what all do you do?
So I work in marriage and family ministry, so marriage prep, marriage enrichment. I have the title of vice chancellor, so I chase down rebel scum across the galaxy. So
he's my boss. I'm the rebel scum. Yeah.
That's right.
That's right. That's why you're both here today.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we got these wonderful two blokes for the Diocese of Des Moines getting to do all these wonderful things. And, Bud, before we start talking to them, they always put us to shame. I always think I do a lot, but like mostly it's titles I've invented for myself. These guys do the real deal, huh?
Yeah, I think Bishop Pates down at the diocesan headquarters has instilled a real strong work ethic. And like you said, Bo, just watching from a distance, I sometimes felt like a slacker seeing all those projects those guys were juggling.
So it's going to be funny that we're talking about hard workers and like how these guys have their hands involved in a lot of things, and we're all impressed. And then what they wanted to talk today, I threw it out. I'm like, what do you guys want to talk today? And Adam Story within seconds said, the long defeat. You're like, okay, so is this like... psychological? Is this what's going on? No. It's J.R.R. Tolkien. So when you hear that, you go, okay, let's talk about J.R.R. Tolkien. To give some context, Tolkien has said this, he coined this phrase twice, once within his work and then once when he was talking about himself. So the one that's probably most famous is Tolkien wrote this in one of his 195th letter, if you have the letters of Tolkien right in front of you, like some of you Lord of the Ring fans probably do. And the quote is, actually, I'm a Christian, indeed a Roman Catholic, so that I do not expect history to be anything but a long defeat, though it contains, and in a legend may contain more clearly and movingly, some samples and glimpses of final victory. But then in The Lord of the Rings, Galadriel says to Frodo, for the Lord of the Gladarim is accounted the wisest of elves of Middle-earth and the giver of gifts beyond the power of kings. He's dwelt in the west since the days of dawn, and I've dwelt with him years uncounted. For ere the fall of Nathrogord or Gondolin, I passed over the mountains, and together through the ages of the world, we have fought the long defeat. So, Tolkien, for you who are not Lord of the Ring people, he doesn't put words into the mouths of elves that aren't important. The elves are these, you know, this important thread throughout the story. So if he's saying that the elves haven't fought a long battle, but they fought a long defeat, that should be jarring. And then when he himself chooses to talk about his view of history, if he says the Christian understanding is a long defeat, that really should sort of shake us awake. And I think, Adam, that's what really caught your eye is Tolkien, who really is this sort of gold standard of like imbuing his world and his literature with Catholicism. If he's going to call history the long defeat, you know, what gives? What does that mean?
Yeah, that's what drew me to this topic. And I'm a very big Tolkien nerd. The Lord of the Rings for sure. Yeah. And that story has shaped in a lot of different ways the way I look at the world. And it was just a short time ago I was watching a lecture by Dr. Ralph Wood on Tolkien's vision of life and specifically his vision of wonder. And it's interesting that this topic comes in when he's talking about wonder. But he mentions this. He mentions the long defeat, and it was something that I hadn't reflected on or been attentive to before. And it really it did stand out to me. It just struck me because I recognized it as counter to a lot of the ways that we do approach history. You know, in our culture today, in the world today, we tend to look at history in a very, you know, progressive way. That we're one policy away from a utopia. We're one project away from a utopia, and Tolkien had a very different sense, and I think he's a wise man. I think he's worth listening to, and so when I saw that, I thought, well, what would that imply? What would that mean for us? What would it look like to think about our story in that way?
So funny enough, actually, John, I know that we were just joking before we started the show that you were like, what are we even talking about? We were catching you up on these things.
Yes.
Actually, you sent an article out to our group of friends that I thought embodies this idea of the long defeat, although it's a completely different world. Was it the New York Times that had a story about not the boat people from Vietnam that made it over to the United States, but the actual ethnic Vietnamese living in Cambodia who for generations have lived on boats because the Cambodians will not sell them land. And I actually think there's something of the long defeat in that, which what I think is important to sort of get to the thread to grab on here is the long defeat is not necessarily as pessimistic as you're thinking.
Right.
You know, but like the sheer survival of the Viet people on these boats in a hostile land is in many ways a victory, but it's no way it's a victory like we're really thinking about. So I know I just sprung that on you, but I think actually that story that you know were shared with all of us has something of this Tolkien-esque idea.
Yeah, I think it's important for us to realize that in the Long Defeat there are glimpses, right, of victories, that it's not simply kind of this existential phenomenon where it's meaninglessness the entire way. It's not like Waiting for Godot. I don't know if you...
Right, yeah.
I mean, it's like nothing comes, nothing goes.
Or Guffman, either one.
Yeah,
of those.
Yeah, right. But there are glimpses of victory. And even there for the people who are, you know, they're... So the article is talking about the Vietnamese people who have been sort of disowned in some sense by the Vietnamese because they've been with the Cambodians for so long, but then they're not liked by the Cambodians because they're not Cambodians, and they literally have to live on these rafts on the river, and there is kind of a bit of a in some sense a defeat there, but at the same time if you read through the story itself, there are glimpses of hope that come from the stories of the people who are making a living upon these rafts and things of that nature. So, yeah, certainly, I mean, you can see that embodying the long defeat there. So,
I see sort of like two different angles on this phrase, the long defeat. And one is, as Christians, like we know that the victory that God brings about is through precisely the means that, from the world's eyes, look like a defeat. So, I mean, most famously the cross, but you can think of all points in history where kings and rulers thought they were like snuffing out the faith, but precisely through martyrdom, God brought about something greater, right? Mm-hmm. On the flip side, I loved how Adam referenced like utopia, how as Christians and Catholics were not utopians, because, you know, C.S. Lewis, who was close friends with Tolkien, he talked about this in a slightly different way, but he said, you know, if in this world we could, in a sense, like attain the full measure of the happiness that God intended for us, then we would have no, like, we would not be drawn to the divine life, to heaven. And so, like, the fact that even in the greatest moments in life, whether that's like a sunset or, you know, like a moment with your loved ones or whatever, you still feel like you feel this itch for something more, right? And it's because we're created for eternity to be filled with, you know, like we're with God's infinite love.
Yeah, and, you know, as you talk about that, Bud, and I think the point you made that it looks like a defeat where Christ has conquered, where Christ has become victorious. And when you were talking about hope, I think that part of it is the long defeat. Where do we look for our hope? You know, because a lot of times in the world we look for hope in power. If I can overtake someone, or if I can impose my will, or if I can achieve the circumstances through which I want to achieve happiness, then I'll be hopeful. But the long defeat is this kind of sense that there's hope even in dark circumstances, even in circumstances we haven't chosen, even in defeat, there's hope because, yes, there's death, and yes, there's sin, but Christ has conquered death. So there's hope, but hope in Christ.
You know, Bud, I'm glad you brought that up because so I've been known to experience joyous moments and at the same time thinking that it's not lasting forever, that it's going to end. I mean, I can't think of an example right now, but even in the most sort of joyful moments, I'll experience it and think, well, what's this tending towards? What's the end game here? And then I get really sad, and then I'm like, oh, am I an existentialist here?
You're ruining it it's going along.
Yeah, I started doubting myself. But yeah, you're right. I mean, there's the we talk about hope and the end game, how God can redeem even the very martyrdom of those.
Well, and even thinking about, like, people outside the church, what message have we conveyed to them? You know, Bo, sometimes in class, Bo, you would bring up the distinction between optimism and hope. And that always seemed to take a lot of students aback. Like, they assume Christians are optimists, but hope is a very different phenomenon.
Yeah, and that's exactly where I was going to go next. It's actually, to me, one of the most important distinctions we need to make in the church today, when especially reaching out to people either on the fringes of the church or people who are outside. They get this idea that we're supposed to be Ned Flanders about everything, and then just have this like relentless optimism that things will turn out right. And I go, you can't worship a God who was murdered by his own people and be optimistic, right? I mean, right. An optimistic person would say, if God comes to town, everything's going to turn out right. Mm-hmm. God came to town, and we all got together as a human race, and we're like, you know what the best thing to do right now with God is kill him. Yeah. That is not optimistic.
Right.
However, the hope of the resurrection is the empty tomb. But you got to notice tomb, right? Like, there's a tomb involved in this sort of this math equation, as it were. And we often forget that. When we're talking to students, when I'm talking with people, that's what I try to drive home, is you don't have to lie to people about the fact that they have crosses and difficulties to face. And I think Tolkien does this well. The paradigmatic fight in The Lord of the Rings is actually not the last one. It's the Battle of Helm's Deep, for all you nerds out there. The point of Helm's Deep was not to actually have a decisive victory. It was to fight off the forces of evil long enough to have a good retreat.
Mm-hmm.
And in a way, in our lives, right, we aren't going to have that decisive victory for ourselves. Not to. I know, you know, you guys might not know this, but we're all going to die at this table, and Bud included.
What?
Yeah. Sorry, Bud.
Is that brand new revelation for you, Bud?
The final victory, of course, is for Christ alone. In many ways, our faith, it seems to be a rearguard action. And I guess that can sound pessimistic, except that all other options are actually delusional. Like you said, like that there's just one more program to solve things. All you got to do is live life a little bit to see that that optimism is unfounded, but that hope is a distinct thing.
Yeah, I'm going to hop on that real quick because I think it comes from the fact that we often mistake imitation for mimicry in terms of who Jesus is. And so we talk about imitating Christ, and what we think immediately is mimic Christ. And people would often ask the question, you know, what would Jesus do? As if I can mimic Christ in doing it without the meaning
of
imitation. And so in doing so, I mean, if you imitate Christ, then you take the entirety of his life, right? The suffering, the tomb, before the resurrection, even.
No, this is a great point, right? Because like you have those bracelets. What would Jesus do?
Right, right.
And like you turn the bracelet, and it's like die on a cross, and you're like, okay, that really puts things into perspective. Because what we want is it to be like Jesus, like he'd say the right thing. You're like,
right,
he'd get killed by the authorities. Are you going to die for like at the hands of the authorities in the situation? That really makes the bracelet not so much fun.
Right. Yeah, and when we talk about this, though, there is what this provides. It's not optimism, but what it provides is hope in any circumstance. And, you know, as we were preparing for this, another thing that we talked about is there's glimpses of the final victory of Christ in life. And then there's circumstances that are really tough, are really difficult, profoundly painful. And it's our job to just be faithful. You know, we mentioned the quote from St. Mother Teresa where she says, it's our job to be faithful, not successful.
Right.
That in any circumstance we find ourselves in, there's no reason for despair. There's no reason to give up, as dark as it gets. And that's another part of Tolkien, too. He talks about the long defeat, which can seem pessimistic, but also he has these flashes of hope throughout the book at any point in time. And, you know, as powerful as Mordor seems, as close as Mordor is to our walls, somewhere there's a hobbit in an unexpected way who's about to destroy the Ring of Power.
Yeah, right? And I like think it's always important to point out that, like, darkness can seem impenetrable. But think about how you only need the smallest amount of light to penetrate darkness.
Yeah.
And I think that sometimes is what, like, funny enough, We who live under artificial light most of our lives can forget this, right? We have artificial light that sort of drowns out natural light. And so it's weird. It's this sort of like counterintuitive idea that if you have too much artificial light in your life, you won't actually notice natural light.
Hmm.
Or you'll actually discomfit your eyes for natural light. Strange enough, someone who's in darkness is actually better attuned to seeing light when it actually shows up.
Hmm.
So if you fill your life with artificial light, when the light of Christ comes, it's no wonder, it seems to me, so many people ignore it. Whereas people, you know, fictionally through Tolkien, the example we gave about, you know, the boat people in Cambodia, those people know when they actually see an actual glimmer of hope.
Right.
We get tempted by the mimicry of hope.
Right. The fence-sitters of the faith.
Yes.
Doesn't tend to recognize genuineness.
Yeah, that's right.
Genuine faith.
This is where sacred scripture to me seems utterly realistic. Where, I mean, the Bible is a stirring message of hope, but it never tries to sell a false bill of goods. So you think about, like, one of the core verses in the New Testament, that all things work together for good to those that love God, who are called according mm-hmm. to his purpose and plan. That verse never promises that bad things won't happen, right?
Right,
yeah.
It's that God's weaving it all together for good to those who are called to his plan. But that's a completely different message than turning on the television and saying, hearing someone say, like, if you send me $20, that God's going to provide you this, that, and the other in your career, possessions, or whatever it happens to be.
Yeah, I think of Julian of Norwich, all things will be well, all things will be well, and all things will be, all manner of things will be well. Never is that, no, nothing bad will happen. Mm-hmm. It's like you said, all things will be well. And so I guess maybe someone goes, like, why have you guys decided today to just really, like, harp on the long defeat? But I actually think I see this all over the place. I see this when people go, man, the Catholic Church is bleeding members, but look at this blank church where everybody's showing up. And I'm going to be harsh. If what they're going to is something like the prosperity gospel, shots fired, prosperity gospel, shots fired, then people need a huge dose of Tolkien. Because the prosperity gospel is not the gospel, and it's only going to disappoint you. And furthermore, it's going to discomfit you seeing light in the darkness.
Right.
And furthermore, I think it makes people in the end hate God, because they misunderstand their yearning for comfort with God. And when they don't get it, they think it's God that's abandoned them, when it's actually the actual opposite that's happened.
Hmm.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, one place where I think it challenges all of us, because we're all involved in different ministries in different ways, is when we face the struggles that are before us and the challenges in the church, and those need to be addressed. And we have to, you know, we have to be faithful to the work that we're called to do. But even within the church, sometimes we look for, we say, well, if we just find this program, or if we just get this initiative going, it's going to solve our problems. And I think the true answer, the answer of fidelity, it's a lot more simple. It's a lot more simple, but it's a lot harder to say, what's the true answer? The true answer is to stay faithful to whatever God has called me to, even faithful to the cross, and to look for hope in unlooked for places. It's simple, but it's hard. But that's what we're called to do.
Yeah, in a minute here, we're going to go to break. But, like, one way that I was joking around with everyone on the show is we're going to talk about the long defeat. And then the real question is, like, oh, so you believe in the long defeat. Why do you all have the jobs that you do?
And it's time for a break.
Yeah, right. It's like, we're going to ask that question and then just, like, radio silence for a minute. But I think, you know, to be self-referential, this is precisely the question folks like us should ask.
Right.
If you're going to be honest and say, Tolkien has a point, and beyond that, he doesn't even only have a point, this is really the question pressing us, then people who are involved in diocesan ministry, people who are on radio shows, like presumably evangelizing for the faith, people who work in places like Bud and I do, if you believe in the long defeat, what's your job then?
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be weird to measure that. Like, you can't go to your boss and be like, well, I had five long defeats today. Or what does that mean? Or you're like, don't worry, boss, I'm bad at my job. Long defeat. Like, that's not what we mean. And so I think when we get back from the break, that's exactly what we'll talk about. So stick around, and we'll have like a 30-minute job session where our bosses can just listen to the show and decide whether we should get paid. So we'll be back with this job scrutiny after this. Folks, if you want to catch up, like actually, if maybe you want to judge us. Maybe you want to tell our boss, Tony Calumet, we're doing a bad job. I got a place for you to do that. Facebook, Iowa Catholic Radio. Twitter handle, at IA Catholic Radio. Again, the Zip Whip line, 515-223-1150. If you want to, just text on in, say, Tony, that Bo and Bud guy, not worth your time. Bam! And then we will be long defeated right off of the station. On the other hand, if you like us, please tell them that, too. We could still use the help. Like I said, you can reach us for both good and bad comments, hopefully mostly good ones. Facebook, Iowa Catholic Radio. Twitter handle, at IA Catholic Radio. We'll be back with the Uncommon Good after these short messages.
Have you ever wanted to be the life of a party? Now's your chance. St. Wenceslaus' Catholic Church in Iowa City is hosting its 6th annual Culture of Life Dinner. The pro-life benefit provides grants that assist local healthcare professionals to attend the Pope Paul VI Institute. The dinner is on Saturday, April 28th at 5:30 p.m. in Iowa City, and it's free to attend. For more information, call 319-337-4957. That's 319-337-4957. So, bring your friends and be the life of a party by preserving life.
Thank you, Caldwell Parish, for underwriting Iowa Catholic Radio. Conform to the wishes of the deceased and to Catholic liturgical burial traditions. Caldwell Parish Funeral Home, Des Moines' only Catholic-owned and operated funeral home. CaldwellParish.com.
Support for the Uncommon Good is provided by Cartridge World. Cartridge World is an industry leader delivering high-performance printing products that help you save time, money, and print great.
Perfect for businesses, home offices, college students, or busy moms trying to find affordable printing supplies, including ink, toner, paper, or printers. For business customers, pickup and delivery are available. Products are guaranteed or full replacement.
Cartridge World, your low-cost, environmentally friendly printing experts. 801 73rd Street in Windsor Heights, 515-564-7400, and online at cartridgeworld.com.
Thank you, Ashworth Vision Clinic, for underwriting Dowling Catholic Sports 365 on Iowa Catholic Radio. Ashworth Vision Clinic online at ashworthvision.com. Ashworth Vision Clinic, 515-440-4610.
Thank you, Construction Professionals, for your support of Dowling Catholic Sports 365. Construction Professionals is a family-owned business dedicated to our customers. Whether designing, building, or renovating, we are here to better serve you. CPCustomHomes.com.
The Uncommon Good, Bo Bonner, Dr. Bud Maher. We have with us from the Des Moines Diocese, Adam Story, John Wynn. They do about 50 things, so I'm not going to take too much time, but just to say, they rule your lives if you live in Iowa. No, I'm kidding. So one of the things we talked about, because it's going to come up, you guys didn't know that Bishop Pate secretly are going to have a quarterly review of your jobs on the show, did you?
I knew this time would come.
Yeah. I always presumed.
Yeah, no, so... with Tolkien, we talked about Tolkien's concept of the long defeat. That's what we talked about the first half hour. And really, to sum it up right, it's not a matter of pessimism, but it's really a caution to not mistake hope for optimism, if you want to put it in a really short way. And that because we believe in the finality of Christ's cross, we realize that, like the verse says, we are like the sheep to the slaughter, right? Like that we are going out and we are, so to speak, taking the lumps for the Lord until he comes again. Now, what's weird is all of us, in some degree, you guys for a diocese, myself for a college, Bud for the National Institute of Newman Studies, you know, here we are actually trying to spread the word about the faith, get people involved. How does the long defeat work for people who work in this field? What does it mean to take that seriously when, like I think we've all said, there's such a temptation to find the magic program that will solve all of our problems?
Yeah, you know, when I think about that, I mean, basically, at the heart of things, I think we ought to have more humility about the work that we do, humility about what we're called to accomplish and what we're going to go out and do. And then when we have that humility, I think what it means is that we're faithful to the small tasks that are put before us, because you know, it's not my job to go out and to save the world. That's Christ's job. But in his work, in his great love for me, he's allowed me to participate in that work in very small ways. And I think, you know, the primary way is St. John of the Cross talks about where there is no love, put love, and then you will find love. And to do the little things that I'm called to do faithfully with love, with devotion, as an act of worship to God. And going back to Tolkien to nerd out a little bit, you know, as Mordor, it looks like they're about to be victorious and they have the siege of Minas Tirith. And the Knights of Gondor, they don't give up, you know, they don't say, oh, well, we're on the wall, so it's over. No, the captains are still meeting. They're still putting together battle plans. They're still talking tactics and talking strategy. And of course, we have to do that. We do that, but fundamentally and primarily, I think we just are faithful to the small tasks that we have in love. And that's the heart of it.
Yeah. And, you know, Chesterton essentially says this when he says that things that are worth doing badly, right?
Right.
Being faithful to the small tasks. He's talking about things that we are called to do, things like motherhood, fatherhood, the vocational calls as a teacher, and in the context of what we're talking about, being a Christian. You know, the task of being faithful is not left to professional theologians, not left to the priests, not left to the professional lay peoples who are working in faith formation, but it's for all of us.
Right.
And so I see myself in terms of what I do as Adam is saying, participating in the task of Christ to evangelize the world one bit at a time, no matter how poor I may be at it. But being faithful to that and sticking my nose to the grindstone that is written out by God in some sense.
Right.
Yeah, as we and Bo on a show like this where we're always thinking about the church's relationship to the common good and to society, you know, and in talking with students and in talking to parishioners and the various people that we interact with, I've begun to sense a little bit of an anxiety around the church's place in America. And you can kind of see this with some of the recent publications out there, like Bishop Chaput's Strangers in a Strange Land, or Father Newhouse before he died wrote a book called American Babylon, and you
right.
begin to hear this strain of, like, do Catholics still have a place in American society, and what does that look like in the future? And I think one temptation, this kind of coalesces with what we were saying about, like, how we get this image in our mind of, like, saving the church, or how do we stop hemorrhaging members. You know, when we think about our place in American society, those are important questions. The one thing we can't guarantee is a certain outcome, right? And so we don't know precisely, like, what the next stage of history will be in the United States. But going back to Adam's reference to Mother Teresa, our call is to a certain level of fidelity. Now, that doesn't mean we just, like, wash our hands of it and say, like, well, it's all going to hell in a handbasket and we'll just have our safe space over here. There is no safe space, but there's also a sense in which, regardless of what we do, we can't say, like, well, America will be a Christian nation that looks this way, because that ultimately resides in God's hands.
Yeah, this is where I take a lot of solace in my upbringing as, you know, Okie redneck. The goal is, like, we don't die, we multiply, right? The goal is that you can't get rid of us. When you look at America and politics, and they're like, they're shoving us to the side. How do we have a voice? You go, I don't care. We're going to be here, right? And I think sometimes people worry about success so much. They're like, how are we going to take the reins of power? And I'm like, no, just show you can't get rid of us. And the more you try to get rid of us, actually, is when Christianity spreads. It's happened throughout all of history, right? They try to get rid of us. They, like, kill off a group, and then it's, I mean, we're like the worst type of cockroaches, right? They kill a group, and then they uncover the, you know, behind the couch, more Christians, right? We just keep pouring out. And then if eventually, this is what happens with the Roman Empire, the dominant culture can't take care of its own business, so we start ruling. Yep. We didn't, like, look to rule. We're like, if you're not going to rule, I guess it's left to us. And so it's yeah. less of a strategy about taking over and just refusing to be wiped out. And I know that to me is part of the long defeat too, I guess.
Yeah.
Is that your state motto, can't get rid of us?
It should, I wish it was, we don't die, we multiply. That would be so awesome.
Yeah, churches should start putting that on their church sign. Like, you drive by St. Anthony's can't get rid of us.
That's awesome.
Well, you know, there's it kind of reminds me of a book that I haven't read, but I've read the review.
Oh,
of.
Oh yeah.
And it's the title is The Slow Ferment of the Church, and it's about it's about church history. But the idea, as I picked it up from the author, is that the early church, when it had this tremendous growth, they weren't. You know, that wasn't the time that they were looking at evangelization strategies and new initiatives to, like, you know, how are we gonna catechize all these Romans and stuff like that. They were faithful to their call to receive Christ's love and then to share Christ's love with others. And I think that's the thing. You know, another thing we talked about before this show is Dostoevsky talks about this, that at times we get caught up and we love systems more than we love people.
Right.
And even in the church, you can see this at times where we get so caught up in a particular program or so caught up in a particular way of doing things that we treat the people in the church, we treat our coworkers, we treat whoever it is like dirt. You know, we love the system, but we don't love the people, or we love the new initiative and we don't love our parishioners. And it's the reverse. You know, there's 100 programs we can use, but the heart of it is we gotta love the people that are before us.
Yeah, John, I mean, like, you have a new initiative, so defend yourself. No, I'm kidding. No, but, like, no, exactly right. Like, Faith Journey is this wonderful thing that, you know, Bud and I have both participated in, and we just got done with the last class, and I think it's the sort of fruit that we've seen come from it. But yeah, like, to hear that and to think about that, you know, here you are, like, in many ways your job is to implement this, but, like, we always have to keep in mind, you know, what is for the sake of what.
Right. And so you talk about the process over people, because, you know, lots of times, and you don't see, not just in the church, even in secular spaces as well, you see people pay more attention to the process rather than the people. You know, they get rid of the workers first to save money and so on and so forth. So, yeah, particularly my position in terms of the programming that we do, our programs tend to look towards the people before the process. That's why, you know, we welcome feedback all the time. This is why we talk to people. This is why we always keep the process of how they learn, you know, adult faith formation, all that stuff in mind prior to producing something. That way we're not simply saying, well, this is what we think you need, but rather listening to them and being attentive to Lumen Gentium's, you know, listening to the sort of the cultural milieu, if you will.
Well, and it's funny because, A, you're sort of writing a dissertation on this in a way. Like, and then on another hand, like, all these programs. My favorite thing about Dewey is if there's a new program, I'm not saying this is all the time, but if there's a new program possibility, I think Bishop's like, you know who's good at new programs? John Wynn. And I mean,
I'm doomed.
Yeah. And I think about this particularly with, like, the Catholic Culture series, where a group of us were like, we should have a Catholic Culture series. And we're like, let's go talk to John. So, like, literally, I can attest through personal witness that, yeah, that's what happened, is people wanted a certain sort of thing they thought would help. And here's the diocese actually taking the risk to see if there's something like that we can do.
Right.
Yeah.
Being attentive to people.
Yeah.
You and I were up in Mankato, Minnesota a couple weeks ago, and, you know, a great campus ministry up there at Minnesota State University. Well, you're talking to the students, you know, like, about this idea that it's really hard to predict the future. And as humans, we like to think we know what the future is going to bring, but we can't control that. What we can begin to do is become the type of people who benefit from stressors and from difficulties, right?
Right.
And I still felt like at the end of that talk that there was a little bit of push, like questions like, well, yeah, but how do I, like, what's the next step that I take, you know? And I feel like in this whole conversation along defeat, you can almost bring it back to the question of temptation. Because, like, in the Old Testament, you see the Israelites struggling with this as well, where God says, I have this great future planned for you, and yet there's always this temptation to enter into treaties that are going to secure a certain kind of future, like in the present, right? And
yeah.
So one of the threads running throughout the Psalms is, like, some trust in chariots and some in horses. Like, some try to predetermine the future, but our hope is in the name of the Lord.
And it's great, too, because they literally just saw insanely awesome things happen, and they still, like, you know, the Red Sea was parted. There is a fiery cloud following you around, and they're still like, maybe we should hedge our bets. So, like, if you ever feel bad that you don't have a lot of faith, remember that the Israelites literally saw God kill the Egyptian armies, and they were still like, I don't know, maybe we should... Maybe we should sign a treaty with these people. So it's not just you.
last week we were kind of defending St. Peter's impetuousness and saying like we kind of admired him like jumping out of the boat and whatnot.
Yeah.
I've always felt like Moses, like I could totally identify, you know, like he parts the Red Sea and on and on.
Yeah.
And then they just keep complaining. I would be striking some rocks too. Like,
yeah.
I've done a lot worse at my house for less.
Well, and this is why I keep trying to throw out metaphors for the spread of our faith that either seem unseemly or not often used. So, like, I know that on this show I've multiple times said that actually what our faith is like is an infection more than it is, like, a top-down marketing scheme, right? It's more that, like, if we allow our faith to be more like a nasty rash, that it will, like, infect others and spread. Another one that I like to point out is that our faith is, like you brought up, the slow fermentation of the church. Mm-hmm. I love fermentation, A, because I like cheese and beer, and some yogurt, actually, as it turns out. But our faith is like that, too. What is fermentation but just, like, purposeful dying? Mm-hmm. So that a new stinky thing can emerge that actually tastes wonderful. Mm-hmm. And that's what we do, right? If we die to ourselves... You know, because people will go like, we live in a dead culture, a rotting corpse. And I'm like, fine, let's ferment it. Let's get brewing, is like I say.
Yeah, and Bo, the thing about that, I think, is as we talk about this, and I think there is a fundamental, kind of one of the key points here is, where do we seek our hope? Do we seek our hope in the Lord or in the things of this world? But how do we learn to seek our hope in the Lord? It's usually through defeats, you know.
Right.
It's Jesus. How did he teach the apostles to rely on him? He took them out onto a sea and convinced them that he was about to kill them all. You know, that they're all about to drown.
Yeah.
And there's nothing pleasant about that. No. You know, there's nothing pleasant about that. And in our own lives too. You know, I've at times the prayer has really resonated with me. The prayer that the apostles wake Jesus up with, and they say, do you not care that we are perishing? And I've prayed that. I've been with the Lord and said, do you not care that I'm perishing? Because that's what it feels like. But we never learn to trust him if we don't go through those moments and then find out that, oh, the Lord is faithful. He is with us.
That's great stuff. I just had this vision, though, of Adam, like, leading a youth camp trip or something and taking the kids out in a canoe and like rocking the boat like, you feel close to Jesus now.
But I told you that in confidence. I can't believe you would say that on the radio.
This permanent record.
Yeah. How dare you? How
you know,
dare you?
Yeah, and
what's happening in the marriage retreat these days?
Literally testing the waters, as they say. You know, so as you're talking, I was thinking, yeah, so we bank ourselves on hope rather than wishing. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a distinction to be made. And I think we live in a culture that wishes things to be well, right? As soon as sort of anything bad comes to my life, the Lord is going to be my Santa Claus, and I wish this to be well. But our entire conversation this day, talking about the long defeat, and we haven't even mentioned the eucatastrophe, right?
Yes.
The very end, the final victory, placing our hope upon that final victory means that we're going to have to endure sort of these defeats along the way, always keeping in mind, though, that final victory. And so God then, and this is where people might hate me for saying this, but I don't like that footprints in the sand poem, because God doesn't carry us, right? He walks with us or drags us along the,
right.
along the way to that final victory, but never ever just picking us up and allowing us to wish rather than hope.
My favorite version of the footprints is still the, and this was like Star Wars nerd to me, it's like, why is there only one set of footprints? And it's because the sand people walk in single file to hide their numbers.
Yes.
Sorry. And that, so growing up, and I'm not trying to like learn so much things from the church I grew up in, but there was that constant like, footprints, like Jesus carries you, instead of saying that, like, no, like you said, Jesus is asking you actually to walk with him. He doesn't say, take up your cross and then hop on my back. He says, take up your cross and follow me. There's right. something in the following mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. is completely important to this. I love the distinction between, like you said, wishing and hope. That's another distinction to be made, is that, and then finally, just a real, because we're getting to the end of the show, so the eucatastrophe, that's another Tolkien-esque word that he coined, and he said this is the sort of dominant way that fairy tales end, and one of his arguments for why fairy tales are ultimately not only for children, in fact, maybe not primarily for children, is to say in fairy world, the eucatastrophe, which, yes, the same sort of base word as Eucharist, right? The great yes. Thanksgiving, right? The mm-hmm. catastrophe that ends in Thanksgiving, is to say, and you think about this, the best fairy tales, it's like, wow, how can things get worse? And then the thread of hope emerges. I was mm-hmm. telling this to people, I don't know if anybody watched or read The Velveteen Rabbit growing up, yeah. But I watched a version of it that scarred me for life, actually, because it was scary. They were going to throw the Velveteen Rabbit in the furnace, and it was this big fire like only 80s animation could have. And then what happens? The Velveteen Rabbit turns into an actual rabbit, you know, and like goes off and lives a happy life. Fairy tales replicate this again and again and again. And he goes, look, the eucatastrophe, right, is the resurrection. But it only happens if we're willing to follow Christ down his, you know, the Via Crucis. And that's another measure. You know, you were talking about, you know, praying like to the Lord, do you care that we're perishing? And that's one thing people say, you want to have a personal relationship with Christ. How do I know if I have a personal relationship? And I ask, have you ever fought with Jesus? Mm-hmm. Because people think they're not supposed to. I go, you tell me another actual personal relationship you have with someone that you've never fought.
Right.
You think God is like, God's a big boy. He can take you fighting with him. If you've never had that sort of prayer, why are you doing this to me? I actually think that's like a marker to say, I might not trust him enough yet
yep.
to fight with him.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, when you talk about the eucatastrophe, in all these moments, the victory, the hope that emerges, it's not by our own making.
Right.
It comes from some place where it's unexpected, unseen. And I think it's often a temptation when we're in those moments to say, well, I need to sort this out. I need to figure out my victory. I need to overcome. But no, we need to be faithful. We need to be faithful, and the victory will come from some place unlooked for. Mm-hmm.
Well, Bud, we've been talking about a lot, so some great wisdom. You have a minute to close it all up, so it better be good.
I think I'm going to mostly close with Adam's comment. I just have to say I feel embarrassed about having the footprints in the sand frame in my bathroom.
Sorry, Bud.
I imagine John over for dinner and just like glaring at our bathroom decor. Like, what are the Mars doing with their lives?
He's actually mentioned that to me a few times at morning coffee.
Yeah,
I always wondered why it was under the sink when the wind came over.
I have the footprints tattoo. I've always covered it up when John Wynn comes to the house.
Well, I'm swimming with the t-shirt on, Bo.
that's because I'm fat, but any rate,
okay.
Yeah. Speaking of hope, maybe someday I'll, you know, any rate, I'm not going to go swimming. Let's not even get into that. Let's not talk about beach bodies yet, but it was okay. Literally 40 degrees last week.
you brought up your footprints tattoo, so I know.
Well, Adam and John, it's been fantastic. Thank you guys for coming on the show.
Thanks for
wonderful
having
discussion.
Us. Thanks for having us.
We'll have to think about the next time to have you back and, you know, tattoos and whatnot and all. So, folks, this has been The Uncommon Good. May Jesus Christ, the Prince of Peace, reign in our hearts, in our families, in our towns, our state, our nation, the entire world. This is The Uncommon Good. We will see you next Wednesday. In and around the diocese, there's a lot happening, but actually this week, April 28th, we have Dr. Kenneth Kemp, who will be doing the Catholic Culture Lecture Series that Bud and I both have had the chance to talk at. He will be talking about the Catholic Church and evolution, and sort of in a more broadly way, how the Church relates to science. The Catholic Culture Series, April 28th, starts at 7 p.m. It is down at the Pastoral Center. Bud, you were the first person to actually give a talk there, and let me tell you, it was aesthetically pleasing.
Yeah, I'm glad to see that the remodeling's done. It's a great place to host some talks about the faith. So it was a real pleasure and honor for me to be a part of that.
We also have coming at May 8th on Tuesday a Man Up event that everybody would want to make. Also May 12th on Saturday, Mary's Meals, the 5K, 10K walk run, which I will not be a part of because I do not do those. But healthier people, swing for the fence, guys. Go do it. We also have our Intube bi-weekly e-newsletter. Sent by mail every other Wednesday. Complete, easy to navigate source for station headlines, event registration, program highlights, and more. Only 2 emails per month, and we don't bombard your inbox. Like I said, we have Mercy's graduation this week on Friday. So if you guys want to come, I'm sure that anybody applauding for what the students have done would be welcome. You can go to mchs.edu to look at that. But if people want to get more deeply involved in their spiritual life here with the radio station, what do we have daily and weekly for them?
If you're an early bird, start your day with The Bible in a Year, Jim Lyons and Gene Wells. That begins at 5 and transitions straight into the Rosary and the Angelus. You can also wrap up your day 9:30 p.m. with the Rosary and a gospel reflection by our very own Monsignor Beeson. So a wonderful way to wrap up your day.
And I think also Father Andrew Winschittle provides those as well. He's going to be pastor at Elkhart, bud, so he's going to get to, like, bind and loose now. I'm kind of worried. No, I'm kidding. He's going to be great. We had all the priest assignments, so it's always neat to see who's going where. And so keep your priests, especially the ones moving, in your prayers as well. Finally, this is a ministry. This is not a job or a business. This is something that we do, and it's not just a ministry that's the people speaking on air. It's not the people behind the boards alone. It's not even our bosses, but it's you as well. And if you feel called to be a part of this ministry that reaches out beyond walls on 24/7, you can do that by donations. We are, of course, always accepting them. But by doing so, you do more than donate to something you like. You belong to our ministry as well. This is The Uncommon Good for Bud Maher. Thank you so much, and we will catch you next week.
The Uncommon Good with Bo Bonner and Dr. Bud Maher is heard every week on wonderful Catholic stations like this one and anytime on podcast. Just search for The Uncommon Good.